I'm very happy to announce we have Jim Rogers of Jim Rogers Holdings and Investments, a legacy investor, someone I've followed for many years, who's been spot on, a big advocate for sound money for many, many years. And we're going to check in with him and his take on this very interesting times we find ourselves actually in the Chinese curse. Jim is, of course, in Singapore. Jim, welcome to the show and thanks for giving us your time.
I am delighted to be here, Francis. I quickly will interject and say there is an Asian curse, which is, may you live in interesting times. So you'll mention we're in interesting times. I don't know if that's good or bad.
I very much concur with that. In fact, let's let you just warm up on what's your summary of where we find ourselves right now, macroeconomically in the world?
Interesting times, and it's going to get more interesting because it's going to get more worse and it's going to get more turbulent. And, you know, we haven't had a serious bear market for 15 years or 14 years, I guess.
Yeah,
that's the longest in American history, Francis. That doesn't mean it maybe go 114 years. It never has. So we're time-wise and history-wise, we're getting closer to a very serious bear market. And I would just quickly interject that we had a bear market in 2008 because of too much debt. Francis, since 2008, the debt, oh my gosh, has skyrocketed everywhere. Even China has a lot of debt now. China saved us last time. I don't know who's going to save us this time. North Korea doesn't have any debt, but they can't save us. I don't know who can save us.
It's fascinating that you mentioned debt because your comments about a market crash, I expect you're talking about the more retail familiar equity markets. But surely this is a case of the great debt bubble and phenomenon. And this is the asset class that's less spoken about by the retail layperson. They're almost encouraged not to understand that. But we seem to be in a very precarious situation on debt almost globally. It seems like you have to kiss the chief leper to join the leper colony. There is no nation of sound money with low debt. And surely it's going to be actually a debt-driven crisis, a liquidity-driven crisis, a banking crisis, everything that's associated with debt that might play out as one of the core themes potentially. How do you see debts generally?
Well, I certainly concur with you. The debt is, and debt is the highest in world history. The United States is the largest debtor nation in the history of the world. That's getting worse every day. This has never been good. Whenever we've had huge debts, especially worldwide, it's led to a problem and a crisis. Maybe this time it's different, Francis. Maybe everything is okay now. Maybe the more debt, the better. Hooray. That's what Washington will tell you. Don't worry about the debt. Don't worry about all this. Well, I've read enough history, or I'm old-fashioned enough or crazy enough to know that gigantic debt, which is increasing all over the world, eventually is going to lead to a very serious problem, whether we like it or not.
Yep. I actually have a particular theme because I totally concur. I think it's going to be a debt-driven crisis, but there's a particular drill down that I want to do. You mentioned America, the greatest debt nation, but for now, although that is very precarious and shifting under them, they have the exorbitant privilege of being the global currency. One thing that has happened is they have allowed interest rates to rise a certain bit in both America and even Europe. But there's one place not too far away from you that I have a particular interest in that seems to be, I've been listening to Stanley Druckenmiller, who has also possibly crossed paths just after you in the investment world. And he said he has no idea for a trade. And we're looking at Japan, and they are actually not allowing interest rates to rise. And they're doing this concept of yield curve control, where they're seeking to keep a very high valuation on debt and a very low yield. But we know them as an inverted pyramid of demographics, a net importer of commodities. And you are known for commodities time is coming. It's been postponed a lot, but it is eventually going to have to arrive. Is short the yen, long the yen hedge plays in the Nikkei, not the trade of the next few years at the moment? Where am I getting it wrong if I'm thinking in a global macro way along those lines?
Well, I own Japanese shares, or ETFs, I should say. The reason I own ETFs is the Bank of Japan's been buying ETFs, and they have more money than I do, Francis. So, yes, and there's no, I don't know why the yen is as high as it is. Japanese debt skyrockets every day now, and they print more and more yen every day. It has started going down, but I can remember when the yen was much, much, much lower, when things were better. So I don't know why the yen is this high, and I certainly would expect people who are short the yen will probably make money.
Yeah, on a macro basis, that's not for timing wise for everyone to go rushing in this particular day. It's had a major spill in strength. But surely also the quality manufacturers, Jim, that make up a lot of that Nikkei 225, that have an export market predominantly and a small domestic market. They're going to have the tailwind also of this currency devaluation, yet they will earn in the leper colony, in a relative sense, better quality currencies like Swiss francs for buying Toyotas, maybe for a while the dollar, of course, et cetera, et cetera. It surely makes also quite a conviction trade, because so many people, when they listen to someone like me, I'm a bit too black. I'm a bit too black-pilled. You and I are both wearing black today, and everything we say seems to be all doom and gloom. But there are longs to be found. And the quality corporations of Japan that have strong export markets, even though the consumer is being killed as well to a degree, must be one of the rare pockets of to the long side's joy.
Well, yes, everything you just said is correct. That doesn't mean it's going to work, given the precarious nature of markets these days. But yes, if you can find Japanese companies that are exporting from Japan, one must be careful because many Japanese companies have shifted manufacturing abroad. So if you, some of them are manufacturing
Good
in the
point.
U.S. now, which will not give them advantage. But every word you said is accurate as long as one is careful and precise.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very good point that given the offshoring of so much manufacturing, that some of that advantage might have dissipated if they're building in Philippines or somewhere else, et cetera. So out of the overall macro view that you see the markets and looking into your own version of trends and the direction, are you more short things, more long things? Where do you see a little bit of alpha in the making in general investment categories? If you were to say, come back in 10 years and we were sit around the campfire one more time and say, Jim, you said, and I'm now 10 years older and hopefully we're both batting on fairly healthily, which one would you have had for that 10 years, if I said, Jim, you've got three pokers in this fire. Give me your A, B, and C. Which would the three be?
Well, I think what you're asking is what would I do now, not what I have done in the past, because the viewers don't care about what I did a year ago. They care about what I'm doing tomorrow,
Correct.
as far as I can know. I don't see shares anywhere that are particularly cheap. I mean, maybe Uzbekistan, where I bought some stuff, but it's a small market and it's difficult unless you know what you're doing. So I don't really see any share markets anywhere. Bonds are the highest they've been in history, or
Yes.
near the highest they've been in history. So that is a bubble. I certainly would not be jumping into the bond market anywhere in the world. That property, as you know, is in a bubble at many places, Korea, New Zealand, many places. Property is a bubble. So, Francis, it's getting hard to find something. The only thing I know that's cheap on a historic basis are commodities. They're still cheap. I mean, silver is still down over 50% from its all-time high. Sugar's a disaster on a long-term basis. So if you can figure out commodities, they may be cheap. And normally, if you have a lot of money printing, which we have had and are having, owning real assets is the way to at least protect yourself and maybe even get rich. So all I can suggest from new investors, if they're worrying about 10 years from now, is learn about sugar, learn about silver, learn about things
Coffee.
that are cheap, that are depressed, and maybe you'll make some money.
You used to say the farmers will own the Lamborghinis. They do a 4x4 Lamborghini nowadays, but I don't think you were meaning explicitly. In fact, funny enough, Lamborghini was a tractor maker before he was a car maker, Ferruccio Lamborghini. But I think that certainly holds. And aren't you even a little surprised it's taken so long? I mean, now the world seems to be waking up. Now the world is interested in various things. Is farmland falling in that as a possible long, do you think?
Well, farmland in many countries has been going up in recent weeks, months. Yes, I would still consider farmland, well, not just a broad statement, but if you find the right farmland that's cheap and that has good prospects, you're probably going to be rich.
Yeah.
If you really want to be rich, you should become a farmer, buy the farmland and become a farmer. Then you'll get paid on many different levels. You know, farming has been a disaster for a long time. And usually when something's a disaster for a long time, it eventually turns around.
Yeah.
If you know how to drive a tractor, Francis, you're probably in good shape.
Exactly.
And if you don't know how to drive a tractor, learn.
Get that crop spraying license for those low-flying planes and tractors. There's your investment tip for the headlines. I love it. Would you actually go so far to short? I mean, that's a bit of a smart-ass approach to markets, but when we're referring to debt, you know, there's well-established ETFs on the long end. You get quite a few, particularly in the States, for example. Would you be ever tempted to take short positions in the debt markets? Because for me, that feels like utter stagnation and eventually potentially a quantum seismic event, which is, you know, a real haircut of some form taking place as a result of new currency or whatever the narrative or tag will be. Do you contemplate short positions on any of those that are super hypervalued? And how would you go about that if so?
Well, I've frequently been short debt in the past. I'm not at the moment, maybe because I'm lazy, you know. Well, that takes a lot of work. But no, if you can short long-term bonds, especially in the U.S., where bonds are the highest they've been in history, and other countries too, but especially the U.S. since it's a big market. And there are ETFs that you can use, they're reverse ETFs. I mean, you can buy these things, and if debt goes down, if interest rates go up, you make money.
Yeah.
There are many ways to do it. Just sell short the bonds. I am not at the moment because I'm lazy, but it's certainly, in fact, you probably have pushed me over the edge. I'll do a little more homework and maybe go short the bond market shortly. I would just say, Francis, I'd much rather be short than long bonds anywhere in the world.
Yeah. One of my favorite charts, I mean, you're a visual guy, and I love actually that you were the investment biker as well. I still jump on the sort of adventure bikes and go for a re-ride myself when I can allow it. But one of my favorite charts that I show regularly, and I'm sure this will only make you more enthusiastic possibly for the short position, is on the debt markets. And I feel that the events that were the events of March 2020 that I will not name, because I don't want to upset the YouTube algorithms, but that we had a seminal event almost with the splurge of money that came down when we essentially shut down the entire planet. The one US ETF that's a long-dated bond, the code escapes me. I'll just get down to the debt markets here and I'll bring it up. But probably as someone who knows the markets exceptionally well and is used to looking at charts, you'll relate to this. It's in essence, you have had a long, long bull market in bonds, which was a bear market, of course, in the yields. And then we had what feels like a final capitulation. It's the TLT is the name I was looking for. The long-term debt markets. And I'm going to pivot to the monthly here, Jim, and tell me if you can spot this okay. And it's showing up. I might just log scale it because it's quite long-term chart. Yeah, it is done. But essentially, you've had this big bull market in long debts going up here. And we feel that was a head and shoulders event with a blow-off top. And that subsequently, you've had an absolute change in context for debt. And you've made that head and shoulders target, but that you're running out of a little bit of puff here now, and that normally head and shoulders, they can be cyclical. This was a 40-year bull market we're talking about. You're not going to be over in a year and a half. And there's still, as you mentioned, incredible amount of froth in the debt markets. Does that encapsulate the story of debt? And have we reached the end of financialization of everything, or near the end? I don't think we can call the end ever, because this monster's had nine lives.
Well, there's, in my mind anyway, very little question that interest rates are going to have to go much higher. As you're not old enough to remember, but in 1980, when the last time we had inflation, short-term interest rates in the U.S., U.S. Treasury bills were yielding 21%. That's not a typo. Treasury bills were yielding 21% because things got so bad and so out of control.
Yeah.
Well, inflation is worse this time, or at least the situation is worse, if you ask me, because of the money printing and the debt. You know, in 1980, the U.S. was still a creditor nation. Now we're the largest debtor nation in world history. So, yeah, of course, interest rates will have to go much, much higher in the U.S. before this is over to solve the problem. I mean, these guys in Washington have been nuts. They have printed staggering amounts of money. They have run up gigantic debts. So, of course, you're right, Francis. Interest rates will have to go much, much higher. Again, we've turned that 40-year cycle around, if you ask me, and maybe not today, maybe not this month, but interest rates will be much higher before this is over. And if the U.S. dollar is still, you know, the lead currency, which is changing.
Yes. And it seems like all of these handing over of the veil. I mean, you're famous for moving from America and positioning in Singapore. And we are seeing the emergence of the BRICS nation, and we're starting to have the twittering of de-dollarization talk and speak. And it does also feel the precious metals. You mentioned gold and commodities in part, but you also mentioned a lot on agris and farming. But the gold is moving from west to east. If we see the biggest producer being China and also the biggest importer being China, it does actually feel that there's an entire migration for a new epicenter for global finance that could in fact be. Our pick is Singapore, where you have positioned, which is pretty smart of you for seeing that so many decades ago and schooling your kids out there. How do you see this socially? And how do you see it coming about? Is there going to be a seismic event, or is it going to be slow degradation, or a combination of the above? Is it going to be disorderly, or, you know, pounds kind of gave up its strength slowly, willy-nilly over time, and it was the end of era? Are we going to be afforded that slow decline, or is there going to be some disorderly elements to the handover of the epicenter of finance to Asia?
Well, I'm glad you brought up the pound. The pound sterling used to be the world's main currency, as you know, and it lost that status over a few years, decades, in fact. And most people don't even know now that pound sterling was once primary. And there were other, throughout history, there have been other major world currencies as well, all of which lost their status eventually. I hate to say it, but the U.S. dollar has had a long run as the world's reserve currency, is starting to change. Fundamental reason, the U.S. is the largest debtor nation in world history now, and debt going up every day. But also, you know, for political reasons, the U.S., the world's reserve currency is supposed to be neutral. Anybody can use it for anything they want, no questions asked.
Yeah.
But now, if Washington gets angry at you, they cut you off. They say, you cannot use the dollar, or we will confiscate it, or whatever. So many people, including America's friends, are starting to say, wait a minute, that's not the way the game is supposed to be. So many people are now looking for something to compete with or replace the U.S. dollar. I don't know what it's going to be yet, Francis, and if you know, please do not announce it today. Send me a private email, because I am looking to see what's going to be the new competitor for the dollar. It should be the Chinese currency, but the renminbi is still a blocked currency. I mean, it's not freely tradable, so that makes it impossible at the moment anyway. So something, I mean, the world is changing dramatically, just as it did when the pound sterling started losing its status. And I mean, I don't like saying this. I'm an American, my kids are Americans, but I can see what's happening. And many people friends and enemies are looking for something to replace or at least compete with the US dollar.
Yep. It feels like there's no real individual candidate. There might be a case for a basket of candidates that could also hold commodities in it, such as precious metals, as well as a few core currencies, maybe. But you kind of feel that the central bank digital currencies, which is something I haven't mentioned till yet, are going to have an intervention at some point, and there might be a reordering. That seems to be the shapeshift moment that could bring a whole new realm. How do you frame Bitcoin and the crypto realm and the technology in and around moving money like that, and the surveillance finance era that it opens up? Where do you stand, and what's your commentary on this potential development?
Most countries in the world are working on, shall we call it, computer money, if you will, putting money on computer, because it's certainly efficient for them. They don't have to print it. They don't have to transport it. They don't have to do anything. And as you point out, more importantly for them, it gives them absolutely control. I mean, they'll know everything you do, Francis. If you buy a cup of coffee with your girlfriend, they'll know it. If you buy a cup of coffee with your enemies, they will know it. So they love the idea of computer money. I don't. Obviously, I don't like it, but I know it's coming, and it's coming within a few months, if not years. So is it good? It's good for them. It's not good for you and me and for the world, but it's going to happen, whether we like it or not. I don't think when the U.S. dollar finally says, okay, guys, this is money now, I don't think Washington is going to say, though, this is money. But if you want to use that money over there, you can use that money. We don't care. They love control. They love authority. They love regulation. So they're going to make it the official currency, just as the U.S. dollar is now and every other currency, every other country. Is it good? Not for me, not for you, but for them, yes. And it's coming, though. It's coming.
Should people of sound money and Mises-type thinking, should we be accepting barter or gold and trying to establish ourselves financially in a sort of parallel universe? Is it possible? And is that not a provocation that will lead to some democracy being exported to our community or some other draconian interventions? It seems there's no escape. Or am I just being a black-pilled pessimist?
Well, I wish you were possible, but it's impossible eventually because, you know, in the 1930s, people used to use different money. And then the Bank of England, which was the most important bank then, said, okay, you must use only pound sterling. Now you cannot use other banks' money. You cannot use other money. And they made it an act of treason. Well, treason, Francis, means they execute you if you don't play by their rules. So most people stopped using other currencies and used pound sterling. I don't have the guns to make you use anything you want, but they have the guns, they have the tanks. And if they tell you, Francis, you cannot use that other stuff for legal, our legal tender, you're probably not going to do it. Most people will not.
Yeah.
Is that, again, I repeat, that's not good for you and me or the world, but it's good for them. And they have the guns.
Yeah, and they have the technology and the control structures to implement that and to make it a universal standard and to make everything else persona non grata. So it's a little dark out there. So we have to build wealth inside the matrix rather than trying to escape the matrix, Jim. And we've decided we're shorting debt potentially on the ETFs. We're going to buy some farmland. We're going to own some gold. We're going to become farmers somewhere where it's secure and safe to do so, where there's good fertile soil. What else would you add into the mix for all our keen and eager listeners who want to tap into your 40, 50 years of experience in markets?
You said gold. If I were buying either today, I would buy silver. Silver is much cheaper. Silver is down over 50% from its high. Gold is near its all-time high. I own both. I will certainly buy more gold eventually. But if I were buying either today, I would buy silver because it's so cheap and eventually will reclaim its high price. What else? I mean, I'm looking, Francis. I'm just like you. I mentioned Uzbekistan before. Yeah, Uzbekistan cheap, and there are dramatic changes taking place. But there are not many places like that that I know of these days. And that's one of the dilemmas. You know, often you can find something somewhere, and I'm sure that there's some cheap stocks in the U.S. or Japan or wherever you want to look. I know there are always some cheap stocks, no matter where you are, but they're fewer and further between now. And so I guess we all need to watch Francis to find out what to do.
Well, it's interesting you mention that. When you say the stands, I'm assuming are those energy plays, oil and gas, or are there other business types, industry, in the stands that you've pursued as equities, Jim?
Well, I really only mentioned Uzbekistan. I know the other stands, and I've invested them at times. Uzbekistan was one of the Soviet republics,
I recall, yeah.
ruined by the communists, like everything else. But now there's a group running Uzbekistan the way you and I would run Uzbekistan, and they're making the changes, the proper changes. So, and Uzbekistan has huge resources. Natural resources, but also man-made resources. I mean, it's going to be one of the great tourist nations in the land and in the world because they have great, great tourist sites. So there are many reasons that one can invest in Uzbekistan. Perhaps, I mean, who knows? I may be wrong. I made many mistakes in my life, but it's got natural resources, man-made resources, and the proper attitude, if you ask me now.
It's funny you mentioned proper attitude because my partner is Russian, and the more we push on the Ukraine string, the more I find Putin looks relatively reasonable. He's pro-family, he's almost pro-business. He has low taxes. This is ironic. We're talking about a post-communist nation, relatively low taxes compared to the larger developed Western European. Germany et al. And the rest of them. And it seems to me that you could even go so far as to say an investment in Russian citizenship and business over there. There's Polymetals, a silver miner. Like you, I'm a massive fan of silver. And we had Rick Rule on, and he was talking about how this particular silver company was trading for barely 2 times earnings, somewhere between 2 and 3 times earnings. And was one of the biggest mines. I'm cobbling together from memory. Don't quote me exactly. And the only problem is it's very difficult to purchase. You literally have to have a brokerage in Switzerland. But I treat that as a structural boundary by going the extra mile and getting there. As these things open up, it's just more opportunity for the upside. So it's never easy. And you know, these barriers or entries are just challenges for us when you like-minded. Surely Russia actually represents some opportunities. There's a massive land mass, massively commodity rich. We're calling a commodity bull market. We're turning a communist nation that is turning more capitalist and more normal conservative libertarian type values versus an old capitalist nation that seems to be turning completely socialist woke. Is there not a pivoting? Are we not having the whole world inverted? This entire and is there some value in that? And do you know, for example, that particular Polymetals, that silver miner by any chance?
Don't know the silver mine. Fortunately, there are many silver mines in the world, or you can just buy the real stuff. I mean, I have the real stuff. But Russia fundamentally is a very good place possibly to invest. Now, I'm an American citizen, so I cannot invest in Russia. I can talk about it, but and Ukraine too, by the way. Ukraine could be an extremely interesting market. They've got gigantic natural resources. I mean, the country's been very badly run for decades, centuries, but it might be a good place to invest now. Except, I mean, this is academic for me, Francis. I cannot invest in Russia in 2023 or Ukraine, although I would love to. Both have great opportunities.
So you're not turned off if you if the possibility had existed outside of citizenship. You're not turned off by the Ukraine, Russia potential investment. I'm a bit nervous about Ukraine and how that all ends up for now, still too much uncertainty for me, but the Russian question certainly remains an interesting one. What's possible for silver, seeing as you've mentioned your enthusiasm for it? I'm a big, for my scale, investor in silver. The commodity itself, what about the multiplier and miners? Do you have a favorite pick on the miners' side? Because we all know there's a lot of margin in the miners. There's a small price move, can be the small difference between marginally unprofitable and suddenly becoming substantially profitable. Do you have majors and miners that capture your eye that could be the 10 baggers, maybe even the 25 baggers plus?
I do not have a name for you, but you're exactly right. If you can find a company which has got a silver mine in Berlin and is cheap and efficient, buy all you can. And then please send me an email, and I want to buy some too. There's no question that silver mines are multiple. You can make multiples on your money. But I would remind you, Francis, that remember Mark Twain, over 100 years ago, said the definition of a gold mine is a hole in the ground with a liar standing at the top. So if you're going to buy the miners, be sure you get the right ones. If you get the right ones, you are going to make staggering amounts of money. Huge, because you get all kind of multiples on your money. But be sure you have the right one, because there are hundreds of silver mines and gold mines in the world, many of which have a liar standing at the top of the mine.
I get that. Yes, I know. Basically, you're warning against very early seed mining exploration that haven't even yet begun prospecting, but have a fancy geologist report about it. If we're talking existing miners with actual production, there's quite a separation between the two. Is that what you're referring to?
No.
Hole in the ground, minus a liar.
Well, you're exactly right. If you can find people who know what they're doing, and you also have to have reserves, it doesn't do any good to find a miner who's got great, great production and profits. They only have 5 more years of reserves or something, because the market's not going to pay a lot for that. But you are exactly right. If you can find the right place and the right people, buy it and send me an email.
Talking about sending the email, there's actually been Chinese people that have been analysts, quite well-thought analysts on the FinTwit, that have actually been saying, we're going to come to an above-ground squeeze point on silver. And so eventually, I've always wondered this, at what point, if there's paper manipulation and price isn't allowed to fix this, at what point does the value or the quantity of above ground silver eventually come into play where price is forced to react to this? And there's a far bigger groundswell of opinion now coming into the fact that you won't get away with silver at these levels too much, not with the ECG requirements as well, which has actually further played into the silver hands. Have you run numbers on that? Is that something you're familiar with, or just trend-wise you accept it to be true?
I have not done the numbers, but I am aware of every fact you just cited, and I know it's accurate, and I've seen other numbers. So yes, as I say, I mean, I own the stuff.
Yeah.
And if I were buying silver or gold today, it would be silver rather than gold, although I own both. I'll buy more of both before it's over. But yes, by all means, buy the real stuff, buy the mine. If you know the right mine, there are many ways to play.
And oil, Jim, how do you feel about oil right now? Because there seems to be two forces at play. We've got this tightening of interest rates where the housing market is teetering. We've got this environment where I don't think it's actually been very pleasant for the consumer. My personal feeling is we understated they denied a recession by the normal standards. There's now an employment element to the definition of a recession. So it seems we have very fluid definitions now. And so the consumer seems to be harder hit. That typically affects oil prices. From my best understanding, packaging, transport, delivery, everything you buy on Amazon has to get dropped off somewhere. It's planes and trucks and delivery vans, and the consumer seems somewhat wrecked. Yet we have this still stubbornly high inflation. It's kind of the 70s on steroids. We've coined the phrase sort of hyper stagflation. Oil seems to be in a bit of a malaise. Is it a bear on account of the consumer going down, or super macro because of the commodity cycle? Should it be higher? The market is invariably right wherever it is priced, but we've had OPEC do production cuts, which I see as a price supporting mechanism and illustrating that it's a right sizing of supply for a reduced demand, and threatening now in July to do that again. Is that the evidence that our consumer is destroyed, and is that price management, and could there first be a bit more down before up, a longer term up? How are you reading on something like oil? Because you may have some of those equities in Uzbekistan, I'm assuming.
Known reserves of oil continue to decline. Known reserves. That was a little messed up by fracking.
Yeah.
Fracking came along. It was a miracle, and everybody loved it. Production went up. But two things have happened. One, people realized, you have to make money. If you're a fracker, you cannot just spell it, but you got to do something.
Yeah.
And many people are realizing that frackers are not that simple. And fracking doesn't have the gigantic reserves that some oil fields do. So, yes, fracking has been great, but that boom, that bubble, seems to be coming to an end. I'm not saying fracking is going to disappear, but it's just the gigantic shifts in production seem to be slowing down, maybe even declining. So yes, oil, call it what you will, energy, hydrocarbons have a future, whether we like it or not, and many people don't like it, of course, but no, I would not give up on oil wells if I were you. I would not give up on oil production. And whether you buy futures or companies or whatever, countries, there are many ways to play. And so please learn about investing in hydrocarbons, oil specifically, and natural gas. Of course, natural gas.
Of course, it's strong, which is very cheap at the moment, having crashed from about 10 to the low twos. The Saudis are sort of looking at, I do think under Bidenomics, if we'll allow the phrase, the two most destructive things was the one you've already mentioned, the seizure of Russian assets and the agnostic nature of payment gateways suddenly being threatened by seizure. And then the disorderly withdrawal from Afghanistan with people who had supported the American army and presence running behind C-130s and C-160s pulling out as two postcard events of a decline of empire, an acceleration of a decline of empire. And Seminole. And now we've seen the Saudis getting a bit shifty with their relationship and making sure they keep an eye on the other side, some mention of desire to be in the BRICS, et cetera, et cetera. This is a potential accelerant of the end of the petrodollar as they start to mute trade in yuan and rubles or euros, et cetera.
Well, the world is looking for something to compete with the dollar, as I said before, our friends as well as our enemies. The Saudis are trading a lot with the Chinese now, and all the Middle Easterners are doing a lot more with China now. China's all over Africa. I have many, many friends in Africa. So the world is changing, and it's not helping the future of the U.S. dollar. So everything that you and I know means the world will continue to change. I don't know yet what's going to compete with the dollar, but I know something will. Excuse me, whether it's the renminbi or not, I don't know. But yes, the Saudis. I mean, the changes that are taking place in Saudi Arabia are staggering. If the people around in the 50s or 70s even were still alive in Saudi Arabia, they would have a revolution themselves because the changes are so dramatic. So the world is changing, and you need to learn. Everybody needs to learn that. And Saudi reserves, by the way, they don't have the gigantic reserves comparatively they had a few decades ago.
Yeah.
So, yes, find yourself some good reserves of oil and you'll make a lot of money.
Yeah. Jim, it's been great having you on. I truly appreciate it. If people wish to engage with your good self in any way, your website, where should they go? Do you run a newsletter? How can they stay abreast of your best thinking?
Well, Francis, I don't have anything to sell. I don't have any. I only invest my own family's money. We don't have any outside investors. We're pretty simple people. We just invest our money in places we hope will be successful. I don't have a newsletter. I don't have any of that. Well, I've written a few books. You can buy my books by all means, but I don't have anything to sell, I'm afraid.
Right. Well, that's why we, that's one of the reasons we like you.
All what they have to do is watch Francis Hunt.
I'd love to have the track record of a Jim Rogers. I'm greatly flattered that you would suggest that. But thank you so much for just bearing with us in the beginning there, which was tough with the tech, and sharing your wisdoms of so many decades. It's an absolute delight to have had you on. And I have to say, our views concur, although I'm sure you got to your views long before any of us. And I want to wish you great fortune with your own personal investment, which I'm sure will continue to go really well. And we look forward to following your various appearances everywhere else. And as I say, not having a cell is almost part of what makes you so charming to us all. Thank you so much for your time and bearing with us and sharing your opinions here today.
Well, Francis, I hope we can do it again someday in the future, if we both survive and if the world survives. I hope we can do it again sometime. It's been fun. Thank you.
I love that cheery note. Thank you so much. Have a great day ahead. Bye for now.